I'll never forget the couple who sat in my office and told me that I had a mission. This was a couple that had been part of our church in the past, but they came back, and they come back because Phyllis's cancer was back, and it could not be treated, and she knew that she was going to die, and she told me that it was my mission to help her transition from this life into the next life. And so for about 9 months, I suppose, I went over to Phyllis's house every day. We prayed together, we read scripture together, and we cried together. There was a time when they could not get her pain medication regulated correctly, and that she was just in utter agony. And there were times when I sat with her holding my hand so hard that it hurt me, and she was screaming in agony, "Why, God, why won't you let me die? Please, God, let me die." It reminded me of what David says in Psalm 13 and verse 1. "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts? Day after day have sorrow in my heart. How long will my enemy triumph over me?" It was heartbreaking. In fact, there was a time when all of us went over to her house and we stayed there all night long in a vigil because she was convinced that she was going to die that night. And it wasn't until months later that God answered her prayer and answered her question. And there are times when we go through Psalm 13 experiences of our own, perhaps not quite to the extent that Phyllis was experiencing at the end of her life. But there are those times when we say, "Why, Lord?" or "How long, Lord?" They're for different reasons, of course. Sometimes we go through the breakup of a marriage, or perhaps it's a sudden financial setback that we weren't experiencing, the loss of a job or whatever. Or maybe it's experiencing chronic sickness or chronic pain, or helping someone that we love go through that. Or maybe it is that we've lost somebody that we thought that we simply cannot live without. But we are overwhelmed by the feeling that this is not the way that it should be. In fact, there are two realities that those of us that believe in God are convinced of that seem to conflict with each other at times. The first is that God reigns, absolutely reigns over all the earth. He is Lord of Lords and King of Kings, and we believe that. But we also know that bad things happen. And as we suffer through those hard times and bad things, we wonder, if God reigns, why is it that we are struggling? Well, as we continue our look at the story, we come to maybe, I didn't really measure it, but I think it was probably the shortest reading that we're going to do. It's the book of Ruth, a very short little book. The context of this story is set for us in Ruth chapter 1, in the days when the judges ruled. So the events of the book of Ruth take place while there were judges, and the book of Judges is a loud book. It is filled with war cries. "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon," was the war cry. Or it's the sound of Samson cutting through Philistines like a scythe going through wheat, except he's using the jawbone of a donkey. It's a loud book, but Ruth is a quiet book. While all of the shouting and the hubbub go on in the book of Ruth, Ruth is about an ordinary life, about an ordinary family that make a move because there's a famine going on, and then how life falls apart, and Naomi has one of those, "How long, O Lord," Psalm 13 moments, but how God is working even in the struggle and her feeling of being abandoned, that God was always there. And as a reminder to us, in our ordinary lives, God is there for us as well. So the story begins with this ordinary life of Elimelech and Naomi, who moved their family to Moab so they can survive a famine. And that's when life falls apart. Elimelech dies. And then in rapid succession, Naomi's two sons die. The fresh start that they had wanted in Moab becomes a nightmare for Naomi as she is left all alone. When we study history, we focus on the contributions of great people and great movements. Yet real lives are lived and destinies are forged one life at a time. And in this book, Naomi's life has fallen apart. She had no life in Moab, and she had nothing to go back to in Judah. So she tries to send her daughters-in-law away for them to go back to their families. And probably at this point, we would never have heard of Naomi at all, except she has this real stubborn daughter-in-law. Does anybody have one of those? Well, Ruth, you know, the speech that she made, Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God." Even though Naomi three times tries to send Ruth away, Ruth is going to stay with Naomi and she is going to hitch her destiny to that of Naomi. Now, that's the famous speech. That's the one we always have as part of our weddings. But there's another famous speech that we talked about in class a little bit this morning, the one that Naomi makes in Ruth chapter 1 and verse 20. "Don't call me Naomi," she told them, her friends, as she comes back home. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune on me." In the depth of pain and excruciating torment, Naomi wants to change her name and be called Mara, which means bitter. Naomi means pleasant. Her life was bitter at this point. But God was still at work in the story, even though at this point Naomi has no... A side note here. Throughout the book of Ruth, Naomi is never called Mara. She changes her name, but nobody ever calls her that. You know, when you're a kid, you want a really cool nickname. You know, one of my friends when I was in high school called me Stick. I always thought it was because I could stick my jump shot, but it was really because I was really skinny. That's hard to believe, I know. But she comes up with this great name change that describes her situation. But never once in the book is she called that. Because you see, God is working. And even though her life is not now Naomi, it's not now pleasant, God is going to have something to say about that. Well, there is... things that have to be done. There's food that has to be put on the table. So in chapter 2 and verse 1, now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I may find favor." As we talked about in class this morning, what she is doing here is following the law, Leviticus 19, that says that people that have fields and have harvests are not to pick over the harvest, but leave part of the field so that the poor can come and glean in those fields. And so that is what Ruth is willing to do. But we're introduced to this distant relative that they have whose name is Boaz, and it ends up that it's in his field that she gleans. And he takes a shining to her, and he wants to protect her, and he wants to make sure she's in the best part of the field. And he tells her, "If you need anything, then see me. And if you need to drink water, here's my well." And so she comes back, and she reports all of that to Naomi, and Naomi completely changes. Now there's a brief flash of the old Naomi, the old pleasant here. "The Lord bless him, bless Boaz," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not, God has not, stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead," she added. "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." So now Ruth has been placed in a situation where she meets someone who's in the line of distant succession that could marry her and restore the family. She didn't know that when she started. Naomi is surprised here. But this can't be a coincidence. When Naomi thought all was lost, there was God working in the shadows to bring about this amazing restoration. And it's at this point, this Greek tragedy that is the book of Ruth starts to become a Harlequin romance. Naomi doesn't want just God to do all the planning, so she jumps in and starts doing some planning. So our reading this morning is from Ruth 3, verses 1 through 3.
Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you, where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking."
Poor Boaz doesn't have a chance at this point. God is planning, and now Naomi is planning, and she puts Ruth in contact with Boaz in a slightly different context than just gleaning in the same field. Well, the love story happens. Ruth and Boaz get married, and they live happily ever after at a time when Naomi thought happily ever after is way out of the question. Like Naomi, we find ourselves in that situation where our past and our present just don't match up. In the past, we had dreams for the future. We thought we knew how things would be. But that past is past, and sometimes in our present, when we're going through those rough patches, those hard times, those trials and tribulations. And Marty did a wonderful job in taking us there in the context of the cross in our table talk this morning, where we just are not living the life that we thought we would live. In the past, we had dreams of the way things were, but in the present, we are going through struggles and difficulties and hardships, and we can't even see what the future holds for us. We can't look to the future because we are so struggling in the present. You know, the thing that is so great about somebody hitting you upside the head with a 2x4, it feels really good when they stop. And sometimes that's the life that we live. We just want it all to stop, and we don't know how, because when we're in the middle of pain, all we can see is our pain. In the middle of loss and grief and uncertainty, Naomi became Mara. She became bitter. That's how she saw herself. That's how she wanted everyone to see her. It was only later that she could see the glorious future that God was working out, and how God was working in surprising ways, in unexpected ways, to bring a good end to her story. And indeed, all she could do in the meantime was to find the heart to go on and wait eventually for what God was going to do. What does it take to find the heart to go on when you're struggling and when you're feeling that you're Mara, that you're bitter? In a word, it's hope. Paul talks about that hope in Romans 8 and verse 24. "For in this hope were you saved. But hope that is seen is not hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently." Sometimes we go through times in this life where we can't see what's going to happen. All we can do is hope in the God that brings about the happy ending. He says a little earlier in the same context, "I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us." Now this glory may be heaven. It may be that we will not be done with our toils and our struggles and our tribulations until God gives us a glorious new beginning in heaven. And then Paul says, when that happens, you're not even going to consider those past struggles. They seem to be overwhelming now, but they'll seem as nothing. But what happened for Naomi is that she didn't have to wait for heaven. That God had a new chapter of her life all prepared. And she was sitting and enjoying a grandchild that she thought she would not. A weak faith or no faith at all is not what happens when we find ourselves feeling overwhelmed and complaining to God. That, "How long, O Lord?" That's not a statement of a weak faith. "God, I'm hurting now and you're attacking me." That's essentially what Naomi says. That's not a statement of a loss of faith. When we cry out to God, that is always a word of faith. That's what David said, the man after God's own heart. How long? And what was it that Jesus cried from the cross? My God, why have you forsaken me? Those are essentially the words of Naomi, aren't they? And we wouldn't say that Jesus lost his faith on the cross. He showed us the way to faith. All of us struggle. Sure, we clean up well, don't we? And come to church and greet each other, and we're all doing just fine. We know that because every time we ask somebody how you're doing, they tell us, just fine. Just. See, that's a qualification. I want to be great, but I'm just fine. And sometimes we're not just fine at all. There is nothing spiritual, nothing faithful about pretending that everything is just fine. The one who says, there is no pain, is Mr. Spock. That's being a Vulcan, not being a Christian. We suffer difficulties and hardships. And that's the point of this story. Faithfulness is not that we live above the struggles. Faithfulness means we continue to wait during our struggles for God to bring about a new beginning. We find somehow the heart to go on as we wait for God to bring the glorious ending that He always will, either in this life or in the next. Now, the book of Ruth ends with a genealogy. As Boaz's buddies are congratulating them, they say this in Ruth 4 and verse 12. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, who Tamar bore to Judah. You see, they recognize in Ruth something of the story of Tamar. Both she and Tamar are levirate wives. Both she and Tamar are foreign women that are caught up in the machinations of others. But both she and Tamar are used by God. And so the book ends with the genealogy of Perez. It goes something like this, starting with verse 18. This then is a family line of Perez. Originally, this was the scripture reading. And I thought, no, I can't do that to anybody with all those names. This is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Abinadab. Abinadab was the father of Nashan. Nashan the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse the father of David. Here's the point of Ruth. Naomi thought that all was lost. She had no tomorrow. She was bitter. But you see, this baby that was born to Boaz and to Ruth was, at least legally, her grandchild. And so one day she was sitting with her grandchild on her lap, and she was only remembering all those dark times in Moab. And not only did she have the line of the kings on her lap, there was another king that would come after David. Through her, God brought about the line of the Messiah. In the bitterness of her struggle, Naomi thought there was only darkness and despair. But God was at work in that story. He had a whole new story. Even though she didn't realize how that could possibly happen, God was busy at work. And so in our struggles, God is working as well. What is it that God is doing with your difficulties and hardships? We all have them, even though often we don't share them with one another. It is a rare person that doesn't have something that's not going right. What this story tells us is God can take all of the difficulties, all of the hardships, all of the despair, and turn bitterness into victory. If we're willing to, like Naomi, find the heart to go on. Know that God is always with you, even when you don't know what He's doing in your life. You have to find a way each day just to find the heart to go on and wait for God to give you that new beginning. So the invitation this morning is to put your hope on that solid rock that is Jesus Christ. His death on the cross doesn't just give us eventually heaven, but it gives us a way to face each day in confidence and in hope, even when what looks like we're going through is hopeless. Put your trust in the solid rock that is Jesus. If you have not done that this morning, if you've not begun that life of faith, we encourage you to put your faith in Jesus, be baptized into him, and begin to live that life of hope. For all of us who may be going through some hardships in our life, let's look at this story of Naomi as our own as we find the heart to go on. If you need to come, do so as we stand and sing together.